Good morning, everyone. I'm Jen Cates, and welcome to the Kaiser Family Foundation. We're really excited to be able to convene this briefing today to learn more about how the U.S. Global Health Initiative, or the GHI, is operating at country level. And judging by the size of the crowd, we think you are too. About 2 months ago, right after Lois Kwan became the first executive director of the GHI, she was here for a town hall meeting. And one of the first things she said at that meeting was how much she was looking forward to going to the field and how important it would be to actually be in countries and talk to people running programs and thinking about these things at the ground level. And since then, I know she's been to several countries. I read her blog, so I've been keeping track. And just as she was looking forward to learning from the field, I know many of us are eager to understand how the nexus between what happens here in D.C. and the field is happening. How does the GHI translate into practice? We're therefore extremely pleased that today we not only have Lois with us, but we have three U.S. field reps to talk from GHI Plus countries to talk about their experiences, two of whom are here virtually, which is, of course, one of the challenges of having the field not be here, but technology helps. So let me tell you who we have. First, we have Mamadi Yila, the former PEPFAR country coordinator and GHI planning lead for Malawi, and currently with OGAC as a senior public health advisor. So she is actually with us in D.C. And then joining us by phone will be two other U.S. field reps, Bethan Moskov, who's the health team leader in Mali, as well as the GHI field deputy from USAID, and Kayla Lazerson, who's the director of the KEMRI Research Station in Kenya and the CDC Kenya GHI focal person. I'm also very pleased that we have two experts from outside the U.S. government, but both former U.S. government officials to share their perspectives. And they are Mark Green, who recently became the senior director at the U.S. Global Leadership Coalition. He previously served as ambassador to Tanzania, was a former member of Congress, and has held many other important roles in global health and development. We also have Carl Hoffman, who's the president and CEO of PSI and the former ambassador to the Republic of Togo, and also somebody with a long career in public service. Before we move to hear from them, and then we'll take your questions, I want to spend just a couple minutes providing some context on the GHI Plus countries, the eight countries that were selected to have an accelerated approach to the strategy. And the reason I want to do this is I think an important point is that they are, by design, a diverse set of countries. They represent a mix of U.S. global health programs, varying health and economic contexts. So I'm going to provide a few slides to that effect. There's much more detail in your packets from a couple of Kaiser Family Foundation reports. I also want to note that for those who are not aware, I think seven of the eight GHI Plus country strategies have been made publicly available recently. And so that's more information about how the countries are thinking about this. And we at Kaiser are soon going to complete an analysis of one aspect of that, of the GHI, which is the Women, Girls, and Gender Equality Principle, and how have the country strategies reflected that principle, which is one of the seven core ones. So turning briefly to slides. One thing that I think is interesting to look at is what the GHI Plus countries are eight countries from about more than 70 that receive direct funding through bilateral programs that go to countries or regional funding. And they represent about a quarter of all of the funding that went to countries and regions in fiscal year 2010, so a relatively significant share. These are the eight, for those who need a reminder. But the funding amounts really ranged, as did the mix of other aspects of the country. So, for example, $14.6 million in fiscal year 10 was provided to Guatemala, compared to $600.3 million in Kenya. Three of the GHI Plus countries, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Rwanda, are among the top 10 recipients of total GHI assistance to countries and regions, with Kenya being the largest of any in fiscal year 10. Most of the funding, if you aggregate it, is for HIV, about 73%, followed by malaria, family planning and reproductive health, and then all the other sectors of the GHI are 5% or less. This is generally the pattern overall for all of the countries that received assistance in fiscal year 10. But I would encourage you to look in the packet, because when you look at each individual country, you see a very, very different mix that reflects a whole range of factors. So all eight of the plus countries receive funding for HIV, maternal and child's health, family planning, reproductive health and nutrition, fewer for malaria, as might be expected. The malaria funding is provided to malaria endemic countries. Not all of the plus countries are. Four for TB and three for NTD. So they're a very different set of countries. And this just shows you the amounts provided, aggregated together for GHI programs in fiscal year 10. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Lois so we can hear from her about what she's learned in the last couple of months. And I'm amazed she doesn't look jet-lagged, but apparently she's been traveling for 2 months, so.
Jen, I'm so happy to be here again at the Kaiser Family Foundation. I was brand new when I was here last time, and I'm very grateful for this opportunity to be back with you today and to tell you what I've learned, and especially for you and all of our colleagues here today to be able to hear directly from our countries. So what have I learned? We can be very proud of the United States of America and the role it plays in global health around the world. And by that, I mean our government and the exceptional leadership role that our government has played for a long time, the work that President Bush and the Congress did around PEPFAR and the President's Malaria Initiative, the work that President Clinton and Secretary – or President Obama and Secretary Clinton – and Secretary Sebelius have played such an important role in global health and in launching the Global Health Initiative, in elevating development. But also, when I travel and I see many of your colleagues, for those of you in this room who have colleagues who work across the globe on behalf of global health, our churches, our faith-based organizations, our NGOs, our research universities, our young people's organizations, the full breadth of America has taken on a goal of helping the world be a healthier place. And that is very impressive. The second thing that I've learned is that action is always in the field. It's always in the country. We here in Washington, we here in Atlanta, we here in other places in this country have an enormous opportunity and responsibility to help our colleagues who are working in country be as successful as possible, help pave their way, help clear obstacles. But that's where the work gets done and where the differences are made, and that's always the case. But as Jen pointed out, it's especially the case in GHI. Because in GHI, we aren't simply going out and saying we have a vertical program where we're doing this. We're saying we want to build a sustainable, integrated capacity for better health within a country. And therefore, what you just saw in the differences between the countries are so relevant, and the strategies have to reflect the countries. The third thing I've learned is that it is imperative that we reach our goals. There are immense needs, and you can't travel in countries without feeling at a deeply personal level the immense human needs that we're responding to. My first trip was to South Africa and Kenya, and one of the things I've told my colleagues is when I travel to countries, I always want to go to a small town. I'm from a small town in the rural Midwest. And I know from my own experience that things can look awfully different from a capital city to someplace very far from that. So for me, it's an interesting test. I went to a village called Gem, which is outside of Kisumu near Lake Victoria in western Kenya. And I went to meet with a family and to see firsthand the power of what my colleagues in the U.S. government in Kenya are doing with their partner organizations, going door to door to help people find out if they're HIV positive and to help handle and cope with that as a couple, as a family, and help understand what that means in terms of the risks around TB and malaria and everything else. And it was very moving. But what got way inside me, and I know those of you who have traveled have seen this, was when I learned that the first mother of that family had died on that hill, bleeding to death, trying to give birth to her twins, and that her twins died with her. And You know, I've given birth to twins in a safe place, in a wonderful hospital in Minnesota, where I hemorrhaged, but I was fine. But I could, for that moment, and I know you've experienced this, you know, you see yourself in another's life, and you know that if it was you on that side of the hill with no transportation to get you to any kind of place that could help you, you know, there would go you, or there would go I. So we have an enormous obligation to meet needs around the world because we as a country can, and there could go I or you. And we have to find new ways to do that because the budget pressures that we're under will not allow us to simply do it by having more funds. We're going to have to create more funds. We're going to have to create new money by working in better and new ways, by being more effective and more efficient. And that's what GHI is about. So what I've learned what GHI is about is GHI is about momentum. GHI is about taking the very good things that we're doing, taking the very talented people who do this work within the government and in partner organizations of all kinds, and doing things differently so that we give momentum to our work, whether that's by focusing on women, whether that's by working differently with other multilateral and bilateral donors, or whether that's focusing and working with a country in a different way. GHI is about creating momentum. It's about making gains and keeping gains and moving forward. It's about the fact that we would all like our grandchildren to care as much about global health as we do and to do this work, but we don't want them to do the same things that we're doing. We don't want them working on the very same problems. We want to have made remarkable progress. GHI is also about the elevation of development with diplomacy and defense as a part of what the United States does around the world. It's about the implementation of the QDDR, the State Department's important document in this regard, and the President's Policy Directive on Development, which is a remarkable document that for the first time really lays out at that level what development means to the United States, foreign policy, and its relationship in the world. GHI is about that. And GHI is about bringing the whole of America to our results in country. Part of that is what we've talked about as the whole of government. And what I've learned is that the whole of government is not just something that we do for its own sake. It is not an end in of itself. We do it because we are trying to do things that are very hard. I look at our GHI targets every day and take a moment to think about the lives that those numbers represent and recognize that no one has ever achieved those goals before. And we choose to try to achieve those goals in the most difficult places on earth. So to do that, we need the most creativity, and we need to bring different perspectives to that problem. We need the wonderful perspective that CDC brings from their experience of epidemiology and going after a problem. We need the wonderful experience that USAID brings in seeing the complexity in how health relates to everything else. We need the amazing experience of PEPFAR's getting it done in an emergency setting. And I could say the same for Peace Corps and DOD and NIH and FDA and all the other pieces. That's why we do the whole of government. And that's why we do the whole of America. We were sort of internally focused in GHI last year. And when I came in, I saw this amazing opportunity to embrace all of us, all of American ingenuity and innovation in our colleges, in our research institutions, in our nonprofits, in our faith-based organizations, in our companies, and that we're best as a country, I think, when we bring all that together and we're able to leverage that to create great momentum. So that's what I've learned while I have been on the ground, and that is what I'm so happy you're going to get a feel for today. You're getting to meet three of my most talented colleagues, who I've just had the privilege to spend time with now. And I hope, Jen, we have opportunities. They have other really talented colleagues in plus countries, and we're rolling out round two, and we'll be shortly rolling out round three. And we would love to have that opportunity in the future. So thanks again, and it's wonderful to be here with all of you.
Thank you. We would love to have the ability to have more voices from either virtually or physically here to talk about this. And so, Mamadi, I'm going to turn it over to you because you recently were in Malawi and you were the GHI planning lead. So you were the person responsible for taking this information from Washington and figuring out what it meant at a mission. We'd love to hear about that.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for having us here. I think it is a real pleasure. And I'd also like to say that I'm speaking on behalf of my Malawian and American colleagues in Malawi and wish they were here to speak on their behalf, but happy to do that. I have five things that I'd like to share this morning. The first of them is the question about why Malawi was a good choice as a GHI plus country. I think Malawi has had a good record of donor and government collaboration in the health sector, and we were all committed to the health plan that the government and its partners put together. And, you know, we've had one national response to HIV, one national response to malaria. And so we were able to leverage that sort of foundation in rolling out the Global Health Initiative. I want to say that there have been some significant challenges of late in Malawi's various bilateral and multilateral relationships, but what I'm going to focus on today is our working level engagements, which have been good and remain very good. Malawi certainly would say that it was a country that had embraced the principles of country ownership, and we can attest to that because we were the first country that rolled out the PEPFAR partnership framework process. And I think that that was the platform that we leveraged in rolling out what GHI was going to mean in country. The second thing I want to briefly mention is that many of you perhaps in preparation for coming to listen to us today have looked at our GHI strategies. The goal of Malawi's GHI strategy is to help Malawi improve maternal, child, and neonatal help Malawi in its own efforts in reducing fertility rates and obviously its incredible HIV epidemic. Our approach was to focus on the health system, hoping that our inputs into that system would help health outcomes in general. And so we are addressing health infrastructure deficiencies, enhancing leadership, governance, management, and accountability, and helping Malawi improve its human resource for health challenge. Before expanding on what's happening country, I want to talk a little bit about how GHI has influenced our internal U.S. government processes. And I think that it has definitely been influenced in a very positive way. I think Lois's arrival did a really good, served us well in terms of bringing coherence around what the Global Health Initiative was going to be, that what it meant about all our U.S. government investments through PEPFAR, through PMI, through the various health programs that USAID has led in maternal health and family planning all these years, how we were going to bring those into this environment of doing business in a different way. And what was really sort of surprising internally was that we ourselves worked in a very siloed manner. And I think that what the initiative brought was the ability to engage, you know, the incredible work of the State Department in its diplomacy, our various sectors within USAID around democracy and governance and around economic growth, that they could help us dialogue with their counterparts and influence what happens in the health sector. I think that's been truly what I'd say was our aha moments about what exactly we hadn't been tapping into internally. My next points that I'd like to share, I know that a lot of people are very interested in how this is actually happening. And I think that it'll be fair to say that none of this happens in a linear manner. And to also say that we are leveraging the way we have worked in the past to make this work better. So I want to give you one example, which was around rolling out a new nursing education partnership initiative, which was funded by PEPFAR. And typically what would happen, you know, we would get engaged with our headquarters about resources to assist, our partner country do something, and we'd do our internal planning and then we'd go tell them that this is what we're going to do. I think what GHI, the opportunity that, or just the awareness, I guess you could say, of the GHI approach did, was that instead of our usual way of doing business, we used the opportunity in-house to really ask ourselves, well, what have we been doing in the nursing sector in Malawi? And to our surprise, we realized that there had been quite a bit of duplication, but we would never have kind of found that out because we didn't plan in that manner. So PEPFAR was talking to the folks who are responsible for maternal and child health, talking to the folks who are responsible for family planning. And we recognized that quite a few of our partners were supporting curriculum development at Kamuzu College of Nursing. So there was an opportunity to find some savings to do more with what we had. And then we also realized that we were not in this together. The Norwegians had been in Malawi for a long time, helping them in the nursing sector. So let's get together with Norway. Let's get together with the Clinton Health Access Initiative, who had just spent quite a bit of time going around the country helping Malawi do some assessments around its nursing needs. WHO was going to be part of this initiative in terms of helping to standardize nursing guidelines. So we all sat together and sort of as development partners got our story straight before we went to our nursing partners in country. That whole process, if you think about how we can do that across many of the programs we engage in, was really, it took a lot of effort. I'm not going to deny that. But I think that what happened in the end was that we have an initiative now that is really owned by the Ministry of Health. They have decided where the resources are going to go, how they're going to be utilized. The individual who's going to coordinate this effort is sitting in the ministry. And those efforts have been embedded in part of the health sector plan. The costed activities are there. And Malawi feels very good about something that is very much needed and is going to take a long time to roll out. But we started off that process much better than we had done other things in the past. I have some colleagues on the phone who have plenty of things to share, so I don't want to spend too much time, but I want to mention one other example, which is that our approach is to leverage the platforms we have in countries. And one of the best examples we have is an organization called Baobab, which is an indigenous organization in Malawi that over the last number of years has developed an electronic database system that was for monitoring patients on antiretroviral therapy. And through our discussions, because what we've done as a U.S. government has been to partner with Baobab with PEPFAR resources to really strengthen their capability to be able to make decisions as to how they were going to work in their own country and embed their efforts within the Ministry of Health. And what we're seeing now is that that has become a platform to expand patient monitoring for TB, for antenatal clinic visits, for maternity, and for under fives. And what is really incredible, and I hope some of you will pursue just learning a little bit more about Baobab, is that it is entirely Malawian-owned and Malawian-run. And, there's no issue there about the leave behinds. The last point that I want to raise is that the country context in Malawi is very important to our work in the Global Health Initiative, that the Global Fund, the British government through DFID, the European Union, Germany, Norway, along with the UN partners, UNICEF and WHO in particular, have been significant partners of Malawi along with the United States. The ability of our efforts under GHI to sustain and expand the health outcomes our partners have supported Malawi accomplish will be strongly impacted by the will of the Malawian leadership, both within government, in civil society, and the private sector. So we are hopeful that as we, in good faith, adjust the way we do business as a United States government, that the government of Malawi in turn will make its own steps to strengthen the areas of our joint response that only they can inform and influence. Thank you.
Thanks. I have to say I read the Malawi strategy several times. I'm one of those people that has read all the strategies too many times. And there's nothing like hearing the examples from somebody who was there. So thank you so much. That's exactly what I think we were aiming for. And now, assuming technology is cooperating with us, we have two other field reps who are in the field right now. We're starting with Beth Ann, I believe, who should be on the phone. And we'll magically...
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Hi, Beth Ann. Oh, and I'm supposed
to... Hi, how are you?
There she is. Welcome to us virtually. We have a full room here, and hopefully you were able to hear where we've come to at this point, and we'd love to hear from you about the Mali experience.
Great, thank you so much, and I apologize to be doing this over the phone. I want to give you a little bit of context around Mali, which is a very different country than Malawi, and sort of how it relates to GHI. Mali is a country that has a long history of a weak government with very limited resources. The health service delivery in this country has been very weak, and even the health sector as a whole has not functioned that well. So oftentimes folks say, why was Mali selected as a GHI plus country? And I think what's most exciting about Mali is the opportunity that we have here. We do have a government, including a president and a prime minister, who turned to the U.S. government and said, we need help. We are at a time now, we are at a critical juncture where if we don't do things differently in our country, the health sector is going to fail even more miserably than it's already failing. So this was a huge window of opportunity, and GHI could not have come at a more perfect time to help step up to this call that the government of Mali gave to the U.S. government to assist them in reforming their health sector. Like Malawi, the U.S. government has greatly benefited through the GHI process, and I'll give a little bit of what we've done here with the U.S. government internally and then give you more specific examples of how we've worked directly with the government and the impacts that we've been able to make. We are a much smaller program than some of our other GHI plus countries here in Africa. We don't have large PEPFAR resources, and we don't have large staffs and programs from the various U.S. government agencies. So this was an excellent opportunity to really look at how we do business and come up with a smarter way of doing business to tap into our collective strengths and expertise and rely and trust each other in a much more succinct and coherent manner. We've been able to really work closely together to speak with one voice, which is really the government of Mali in terms of avoiding some of the confusion when each of the, like Malawi cited, each of the different government agencies going to the government of Mali to talk about the same problem. Now we go with one government agency or one U.S. government to talk about a similar problem. We've also seen a significant mental shift in how we do business. We now look to each other to bring technical assistance to the table. We have all of our joint planning meetings with all of our U.S. government partners, and it's been exciting to see partners funded, for example, by USAID and partners funded by CDC coming together, talking, and now doing joint planning on their own. That's been an exciting transition. Peace Corps volunteers, for example, are now able to access any training. Peace Corps volunteers, I should say, in their homologs, access any training offered by other U.S. government agencies to allow to spread the work that we're doing. We have joint planning efforts between USAID, CDC, and the Department of Defense to work in areas that we've never been able to work before. Most significantly has definitely been the cost-saving and smarter program of U.S. government resources. By reducing duplication of efforts, by coming up with smarter ways of doing business, we've been able to save millions of dollars in our precious resources that we have available to us. So, for example, looking at some of the work that we've done in neglected tropical diseases, CDC, NIH, and USAID have all worked with the Ministry of Health to do various aspects of implementing programs for neglected tropical disease control, including training of community health workers, mass distribution campaigns, policy work, research, surveillance. But prior to GHI, none of that work was coordinated, and everyone worked sort of independently. Now, under GHI, we have created a complementary package of services which allows NIH and CDC to bring their surveillance and research work to the table, along with USAID and the Ministry of Health, and we've been able to create an integrated package deworming and vitamin A distribution for children under 5 during nutrition campaigns, which has led to a significant increase in the number of children having access to these services in a much more appropriate, targeted way because we better and understand better where the greatest gaps in needs are. And so by the three agencies with the government of Mali working closely together, we're able to better solve some of the problems that are facing the country. Looking at what we've done under GHI in terms of the priorities, I think the most significant work that we've been able to do has definitely been with the Ministry of Health and the government of Mali and helping them to build their new 10-year health strategy. The current health strategy will be coming to an end at the end of this year. This current strategy is very cumbersome, lacks priorities, and has resulted in very stagnant growth in the key indicators in the country. The U.S. government has worked very closely now with the Ministry of Health and the Prime Minister's Office, as well as the President's Office, to develop a new wave of planning and preparing for this strategy, which has meant an independent evaluation leading to significant recommendations, the most important of which is a real reform in how the government of Mali and the health sector in Mali implements programs. The current structure in Mali is set up to be decentralized. However, it doesn't function, and everything still happens at a central process. The President and the Prime Minister have now, through the advocacy and support the U.S. government has brought to them, agreed to make a significant shift in how the entire health sector is implementing its programs. The new strategy will be much more clearly prioritized with a strategic vision in place and a now annual planning process that is going to be taking place at the community and district level. The U.S. government has leveraged support from UNICEF, WHO, and Canada to help develop and design this decentralized planning tool to better meet the needs of communities. What's been exciting also for us is, you know, when we were planning, the U.S. government interagency team was planning for our GHI strategy. We did a lot of team building, and we did a lot of trust building. We've now been able to use this PRODES planning process to do the same thing within the entire health sector. Because as the President of Mali has rightly said, GHI priorities are not just health priorities, they're development priorities. And we as sectors need to be able to adapt them and implement them. So as we've gone through preparation to develop and design this new reformed strategy we've used this as an opportunity to build support and capacity between how the donors work together with each other and how they work with the Ministry of Health. And that's been very significant. This has led to a real strategic shift, or I should say we're still in that shift of how the Ministry of Health is doing business. For the first time in the history of Mali, senior leadership, i.e. the President and the Prime Minister, have significantly engaged in reform around family planning, have called for a decentralized approach for delivery of family planning services, which the U.S. government now will be implementing. It was one of its GHI priorities. They've proposed to us, and we're very excited about the initiative that they've taken, to sort of replicate what we've done in HIV/AIDS with mobile VCT clinics and create mobile family planning clinics for youth, because youth do not access family planning services through the traditional health service, through the traditional health system. 75% of Mali's population is under the age of 25, and so the government is very concerned about how we're accessing family planning to youth. So creating these mobile youth family planning clinics will be a new delivery channel for family planning in a country which has been traditionally very conservative and very much very quiet and silent about family planning. Another exciting development has been, Mali's Global Fund grants have been, many of them have been under suspension due to investigation. There has been some problem with certain individuals in corruption. But the government, again, has turned to us and asked us to serve as the to serve as the vice president of the country coordinating mechanism for the Global Fund. Again, under GHI, we've been able to bring a lot of technical assistance to the table. We've also been able to reach out to our colleagues in other areas at USAID, including governance as well as the State Department, to help us with health sector, healthcare financing, and health sector, which leads into our health sector reform. Again, this is the first time the government is saying, recognizing that there's a problem with their financing issues, and turning to us and asking for help in terms of how we do business with them. A couple of other points that I wanted to raise under GHI has been the increased focus on community-based service delivery for health and within the health system. And this has been hugely important because the central government is now recognizing, again, for the first time, that if we want to make change and impact in this country, then the lion's share of resources, both human resources, commodities, and fiscal resources, have to be focused at the community level. And the government has a system for community-based service delivery, but it's been very weak. They are now looking at their own budget, how they can do a better job of moving resources down to the community level. And they're turning to the U.S. government under GHI to be able to do that. So while we're still on a path of delivery in terms of what's happening with GHI, I think Molly is so excited about the directions, and I think what is very exciting is that the leadership throughout the country, the other donors, even down to nurses in health clinics who benefited from some of the new work we're doing under GHI, will all tell you the same thing about how excited they are with how GHI is helping this country and the health sector in this country to really change how it does business to ultimately reach the women and children who most need our services. So I think that, you know, again, while we are a smaller country, I think the passion and commitment behind and motivation behind GHI across the board is as strong as you'll ever get. So I'm going to stop here, and I'm sure later on, if there's questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you so much. It's striking. A couple of the things that I think a lot of us in Washington were talking about a few months ago are really just coming much more to life, one being the country ownership examples that we heard from Malawi, but also one that both of you spoke about was the working with other donors and sort of the other partners, which we know has gone on, but sort of more explicit discussion of that. It's very, very hopeful and interesting. Kayla, I'm hoping that you're there as well, and I had the pleasure of meeting you in person last year, so I'm really glad that you can join us today from Kenya.
Sure. Hi, everybody. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for inviting me to be a part of this. I'm speaking on behalf of our GHI planning lead, the PEPFAR coordinator, Catherine Perry, and the USAID GHI lead, Lynn Adrian, and myself, and then, of course, all of Kenya and the government of Kenya and all the other USG partners. So I don't want to repeat some of the same things are actually happening in Kenya that you just heard, and I don't want to repeat them, but I wanted to focus on a few areas where GHI is really coming in and really making a big difference. I think the one thing which is a bit repetitive but really worth repeating is it is really changing both the way the government is taking such an ownership and leadership role in every conversation and every meeting in ways that hadn't happened quite the same way before, and also across the USG, the ways in which we work together, the ways in which we meet, the ways in which we share information and find synergies has really changed. And I think that GHI makes sense. It's holistic. The principles are correct. And everybody, I think, is really pleased to see this arrive. A couple of examples, and I wanted to spend a little bit of time on the learning agenda, which the other two colleagues haven't mentioned, but GHI has within it a learning agenda in the GHI Plus countries to really take all the things that we're saying and measure them in some way and find out what are we learning. And so in an area where we have pulled together all of USG and, of course, the government of Kenya is leading this, we are looking at maternal child health and neglected tropical diseases and pulling in the different agency strengths and implementing a variety of activities around HIV, around malaria, around deworming. And we're measuring the cost of that. We're measuring the impact of that. So what does it take to meet like this and have many meetings across agencies, across government, Those are certain transaction costs that are important, but what do you get for it? And what's the impact on morbidity and mortality? And we're able to use our platforms, our demographic surveillance platforms, to actually measure real impact, even sort of interim impact as well as sort of the end game, which would be mortality. And so I'm looking really at the GHI targets as our way of measuring. And so we're really excited. The government is really excited. It's a way to coordinate partners, certainly beyond USG partners, UNICEF and others that are contributing to health in Kenya. As you heard, Kenya has an enormous donor contribution. And so there are many, many partners in addition to the huge contribution from the U.S. government. And coordinating that is a challenge. And GHI has kind of given license to the government to really take that coordination and really start doing it and really seeing a big difference. The other things we are looking at, is similar to Mali, we're looking at the duplication of effort across the U.S. government and putting portfolio next to portfolio and finding each and every area where there might be duplication so that we can save those same kinds of millions of dollars through that kind of exercise. We're also hugely building local institutions, although we hope PEPFAR will continue for a very long time, and PMI, we're building the local institutions and the capacity in hopes of, you know, an exit at some point and really creating everything to leave in place. And that's been ongoing and has very much been strengthened through GHI. And then we're looking at new collaborations. PMI, the President's Malaria Initiative, and Peace Corps have new collaborations as a result of GHI. We're looking across DOD and CDC and NIH and where are there synergies, where can we collaborate further, and how can we save resources. I think in this fiscal environment, we're all very aware at how important GHI is to look for ways in which we can save money and also, you know, really do business differently. So I think I want to stop there because a lot of the examples are similar to what you've heard, and I want to make sure there's time for you to ask questions to us. Thanks.
Thanks so much. I remember when we talked last about GHI back in October, it was about what is will the learning agenda look like. So it's great to hear you talk about how you've been implementing it. So now this is not the sort of counterpoint at all, but just to get a different perspective, which is to people that have not been currently implementing the GHI but have a lot of field experience and actually working in an organization with a lot of field presence, just about some of the reactions you might have having been there, done that, and now this is different, what would you want, you know, reflect on at this time?
Thanks, Jen. It's an honor to be with all of the speakers here, very distinguished and honored to be sharing my thoughts. It is refreshing that a time of strong politics and sharp debate that America's historic development programs are the product of consensus and national purpose, and I think that's great and something that we should celebrate. Just quickly, offer some informal thoughts. Seems to me that the largest contribution that GHI is making really falls on perhaps 3 points. Number one, and we heard it right off the bat from Mamadi, and that's human capacity building, because in my experience, really the principal barrier to success in so many of the strategies that we have is the lack of sufficient human capacity in the countries in which we work. You know, if you don't have enough nurses or healthcare workers in rural Tanzania, you can't get the bed nets out. You can't get the meds distributed. You don't have people who know how to work with the RDT. So that emphasis that we're seeing in GHI, I think, is terrifically important. And if nothing else, I think GHI is bringing that issue or that challenge to the forefront. So that, to me, is something that's, I think, a great contribution. Secondly, I would say the sharpened focus on women, girls, and gender equality. I think in the field we've thought for years that a focus on women is really the key to success in so many of our programs. But again, perhaps GHI has been a useful way to sharpen that focus and to make sure that it is an explicit part of our strategy and planning. And again, to me, that's a very useful contribution. And then I think, and we've also heard this, the preservation of the policy continuum. I think it's only natural when you have a shift in administrations for an administration to sort of want to do something new. And I give a lot of credit to the Obama administration in that, yes, it wants to do something new, but it also wants to recognize and build on what's working. And that, I think, is something very admirable and I think very important, because in our global health strategies and programs, there's a lot that has been working and has been a remarkable success. And so if we can build on it and take it to new heights, that's nothing but great. I think the challenges to the sustainability of GHI in some ways are roughly the same that they were about a year ago. Number one, I think messaging and expectations. You know, we live in a city here and capitals all around the world in which people are very quick to read terminology as meaning more money, more resources. We're in a difficult time, and obviously that's a challenge, as Lois was very quick to point out. So I think it's very important that as we talk about GHI, we are very clear as to the resources that will be involved. And that's especially true in the field, in those capitals in which a lot of our leadership is used to a time when we saw exponential increases in a ramping up of resources and programs. Well, we're in a time when we're taking perhaps a deep breath here and looking to assess, reassess, and build on things. But if we're not careful, there will be disappointment. And so I think clarity around managing those expectations is awfully important. Secondly, I would say measurement. I think, again, one of the great features about GHI is its focus on outcomes. Very important, and you can never do that enough. I think it'll also be important to set forward interim measurements and benchmarks and outcomes. Thirdly, opportunities. I think the opportunities that I see for GHI in the next couple of years, number one, I think choosing to select GHI plus countries and mobilize behind those choices resources is very important and something to be commended. But I think along with that, with those new resources must come tough questions. So as we look at some, and we heard some of it in the, I think, the reports this morning, as we get the initial returns, I think we all have to ask ourselves tough questions in an effort to learn as much as we possibly can from those GHI plus countries and take those lessons and apply them elsewhere. Because obviously in the GHI countries, more resources are coming in for that purpose, to learn lessons. I would like to hope that GHI will mean more resources going to all countries in future years, but as everyone has been saying, that's clearly a challenge. So we have to ask ourselves tough questions. I think be very sober-minded in the assessment that we have of the various strategies, and I think the administration's done a great job in choosing a wide range of scenarios so that we can do just that. But to me, that's going to be an important challenge, an important opportunity. And then from my perspective, I think the other great opportunity is in brand clarity. One of the things that we're often guilty of when we create all the programs that we have created in the field over the last 10, 20 years is we sometimes forget how they're perceived by others. We have an alphabet soup of acronyms and authorities and names and logos, and in many of these countries, it's a confusing maze. They're not quite sure who it is that they're supposed to be talking to, or you know what this acronym means. Is this government? Is this private sector? What is it? Well, GHI, obviously, by coordinating and pulling together, has an opportunity to brand our presence, if you will, in global health, and I think that's very important. Not only for effective communications with our partners, public and private sector, but also for policymakers. You know, as we take a look at the return on investment we have a return on investment clearly in the field in poverty relief, lifting lives, and building communities. But also, there's a public diplomacy purpose, obviously, to what we do. And I think we're all too often guilty over the years at not doing that as effectively because, again, we've got this proliferation of fragmented authorities and brands. And so I see GHI as a very useful contribution and opportunity there.
Carl?
Thanks very much. I'm delighted to hear, as a social marketing organization, delighted to hear the conversation around brands, brand clarity, brand equity, brand discipline.
Yeah.
Just a couple of quick thoughts, because I know you've heard a lot of people talking already. Thanks also for including me. In 1985, I was on my second tour as a junior foreign service officer and was assigned to Kigali, Rwanda. And in 1985, that was basically the epicenter of HIV. And I remember learning at the time that, for instance, mothers delivering in the hospital in Kigali, which was a rare enough occurrence that they were in the hospital, were up to 25% seropositive. So, you know, that was sort of my introduction to the HIV challenge in Africa, and against which we had no arrows in the quiver. 15 years later, I was ambassador in Togo in 2000, and again, not as dramatic an HIV burden there, but I certainly was interested in the problems of HIV in Togo, and so made it a point of trying to reach out to people who were living positively with HIV. And again, at that point, in Togo, a low-priority country from American foreign policy perspectives, I had no arrows in my quiver. You know, ARVs were over the horizon. They were absurdly expensive. It was still the moment where the policy community in Washington thought it was really an impossible task. We might be able to do it in the United States, but we certainly couldn't talk about saving the lives of people suffering from HIV in Africa. And, you know, the progress that's been made over the last 10 years is remarkable. And as Mark points out, it's a bipartisan success in terms of PEPFAR. And as Lois, you mentioned, it's been distinguished in terms of its just get it done sort of orientation, an emergency program that did great things. And I think in terms of GHI, about which we've heard wonderful testimonials today, which make me feel really good, you know, from my perspective, that vertical funding for HIV that we all know has real shortcomings, nonetheless was a powerful driver of change in terms of that part of the health burden in Africa. And trying to ensure that we broaden that without losing the impact is obviously a great challenge for you and your colleagues. Integration being the watchword of GHI makes perfect sense to all of us who are practitioners. We all understand the value and the cost effectiveness that can come from integration. From our perspective in particular, you know, the one piece that must be integrated in global health funding is around family planning and reproductive health. But we all know, just from the experience here in Washington over the last several weeks, what a lightning rod this topic continues to be. And how this, you know, the issue of family planning was close to shutting down the U.S. government. So I think this continues to be a big challenge for us all, and certainly for the Global Health Initiative. I mean, it's great to see that in some areas we're able to do more, but some of the pie charts that we looked at still demonstrate the obvious fact that our funding is not perfectly coordinated with the burden of disease. I mean, Mark, you oversaw what must have been one of the largest PEPFAR programs at the time, and it was making real differences in the lives of Tanzanians. But we have benefited. PSI has benefited from the stream of funding that's gone into HIV prevention. I mean, we distributed 1.3 billion condoms last year, and malaria, 120 million or so mosquito nets cumulatively over the last 10 years. But we know that those important parts of the health burden in Africa are not the totality. And what's the money that's going to deal with diarrheal disease? Very little. Can we get money even for oral rehydration salts plus zinc? Very tough. Nobody's interested in that. Can we get money for dealing with pneumonia, the other top killer of kids under five. Very tough to do. So although this, to me, it sounds like a very promising start, I think we have to be open-eyed about the real challenges ahead of us. The funding streams still are not really matching up to the burdens that are intended, that our consumers, that our constituents, our recipients are facing. Just one final thought, maybe. And it goes back to your point, Mark, about brand clarity. You know, whole of government obviously is a powerful and inspirational idea. And as you, Lois, are realizing now from your perspective there on the seventh floor of the State Department, the whole of government is it encompasses a lot. And sometimes that's overwhelming. It's just overwhelming. So I think we still have much of the challenge ahead of us to turn that whole of government into a focused response. And I think, you know, we as partners of the U.S. government in funding are hopeful to be helpful in that. But I see that as a real challenge going forward, too. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And amazingly, we actually have quite a bit of time for questions. I have many, but well, I'm going to actually let us start with all of your questions. We'll take three at a time. Please stand up and identify who you are, just so we know, and we'll take three questions and then turn over to the panel. And we'll, Kayla and Bethann, we will make sure to go to you periodically. And if you have a specific question for someone, let us know, but if it's a general question. So lots of hands are up. There's mics going around. There's Andini's up here with a question. Oh, great.
Hi, Jill Gay, consultant. My question is, what's going to happen with country ownership in Mali given the recent riots and unrest if the government changes?
Hi, Robin Roisman Graham, Millennium Promise. I have a question for the representatives from the field. What are your discussions, and also for Ms. Quammen, let me just first thank you for all of your remarks. It's been really great. What have your conversations been with the ministries of finance to help countries budget in increased investments for health?
I like these short, very targeted questions.
Mark Engman, UNICEF USA. You talked a lot about working with other donors, and I'm just curious at the country level when you're looking at the strategy development and the resource allocation, is there a chance to communicate with the big UN health agencies, so WHO, UNICEF, UNFPA, at that level, or do you rely on the government, host country government agencies to handle that coordination?
So let's have our field representatives start with answers. And Bethann, if it's okay, if I can turn to you first, since there was a specific Mali question. And then maybe you can add what something about the Ministry of Finance.
Sure. I'm not sure which civil unrest we're referring to. There's, you know, periodic protests here in Mali against various issues. There are problems in the north, which, you know, are sort of managed on a daily basis. We still work in the north. And we haven't seen there's not been such political unrest that we anticipate a unexpected hostile change in government. So the, you know, the current president is stable. The re-elections that are happening next year, we're fully anticipating a positive shift in power. This current president is working very closely and identifying, has actually replaced a number of ministers and senior advisors to ensure that his last year there can be accomplishments. Health is a priority. There's a few other priorities that he's focusing on. So we feel very positive and optimistic that with the leadership the way it is, that it will remain stable till elections will be stable, and that there are the new people that have been put into place are action-oriented and looking to carry this through such that systems are established and there won't be a disruption when a new president comes on board. That's what we can do for that one. Just a couple other points on the other two questions. Ministry of Finance has definitely been involved and engaged in discussions as we've been going through the planning process for the new strategy. We have three Ministry of Finance point persons who are part of this whole evaluation implementation and development of the new strategy to look at the fiscal implications, especially if we're really completely flipping the lid on how we do business in Mali around planning for health and understanding that resource envelope. That's also helped as well as with the Global Fund. We've been looking to strengthen the fiscal the capacity to do fiscal management and oversight. Ministry of Finance has been working with us to implement a year-long action plan for strengthening financial systems in the country. So they've been very active in all of this from the beginning. A final note: UN agencies. Currently in Mali, the UNICEF is the head of the health donor group. They've asked us for us to sit with them as a sort of co-head, an unofficial co-head in terms of planning. Most of our planning around reform includes UNICEF, UNFPA, and WHO are the three big groups that we work with here. There's a very strong coordination and collaboration amongst the UN agencies and the U.S. government. And again, the UNICEF has also a strong advocate for GHI's principles and its way of doing business because they make sense and the government has embraced them so well. So there's very strong coordination at the country level with these various UN agencies. I'll stop there.
Thanks. Kayla, anything to add?
Yes. Sure. Thank you. So very similar in Kenya. There have been numerous meetings together with the Ministry of Finance, a lot of discussion around investments, such as adding a tax to the Safaricom, which is the mobile phone company, the largest mobile phone company, to reap back finances to invest into ART purchase, et cetera. Those kinds of brainstorming and thinking about ways in which to increase money coming in through domestic purchases that would then go to the health sector. So there's been numerous conversations around that issue. And then with the UN agencies, we're all part of, again, similar to Mali, the health donor group. We meet together, we coordinate together, and they very much have embraced GHI for the reasons of it being absolutely correct in their point of view and have made investments in a lot of the community work that we're doing. They're investing in the learning agenda that I mentioned earlier, so definitely very coordinated with the UN agencies as part of this. Thanks.
Just very briefly, in Malawi, the Ministry of Finance is very much a part of what goes on in the health sector. They chair the CCM. Different development partners and collaborating partners have learned to use the Ministry of Finance sometimes to put pressure on the Ministry of Health to get certain actions done. I think from a U.S. government perspective, that is one of the areas where we have leveraged our State Department leadership. When a new Secretary to the Treasury is named, that our DCM or our ambassador will engage at that level to make sure we have good buy-in. So Ministry of Finance, I mean, there's pressure on them to increase their contributions to the health sector, and we'll see whether that happens in their upcoming budget cycle. With regard to the UN agencies, I think one of the best things to say is that in Malawi there is good division of labor. The backbone of supply chain in Malawi has been carried by UNICEF. WHO is a normative body. We don't really typically get involved in how much budget they have in these countries, but we certainly have good partnership and good collaboration with them in all our efforts. Thanks.
More questions? We have one up here, there, and over here.
Hi. Thanks, Jen. I'm Nandini Uman from the Center for Global Development. This is a great panel, something that we've been waiting for many months, so it's really exciting to hear some tangible results. I wanted to actually focus on something that Carl Hoffman said about the whole of government approach and the whole GHI in general as being overwhelming because it's such a transformational process, and focus on something that could be a hook for the GHI in terms of targets, in terms of measuring and reporting these on a regular basis. As all of us know, PEPFAR is legislated under authority to actually report targets every year, and that has been its success in terms of maintaining support and interest in the program. So I was just wondering, I know it's a difficult thing because you're dealing with different targets in different countries, but what the thinking was that is, happening to put something like a target reporting system in place that doesn't have to be outcomes and impacts right away, but these very concrete interim measures. Thanks.
Yeah, hi, David Bryden with Results. The GHI is a presidential initiative, and yet so far we haven't seen much public engagement by the president himself. So I'm wondering when that will finally start to come forward. I mean, looking, for instance, at the UN process of negotiation for the high-level meeting, UN diplomats, U.S. diplomats there are working to weaken the outcome declaration. The GHI itself... $11 billion short, not on track to meet its programmatic goals that itself set for itself. We have 10 African presidents going to the UN meeting on HIV/AIDS. The president is not expected to be there. So when will we see President Barack Obama public engage on his presidential initiative?
I'm Daniel Singer from the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. Considering the limitations on resources available for the GHI and the emphasis on efficiencies and integration, I'm interested to hear what the panelists think would be appropriate outcome measures above and beyond those targets that are already established in morbidity and mortality.
Lois, I think most of the questions are for you. But I'd be curious to hear, actually, if Mark or Carl had any thoughts.
Thank you very much for those excellent questions. First, to the question around targets, this is occupying us every day. I would agree with you that I think targets are really important. They have a way of concentrating the mind and focusing your energy, and also a way of helping us understand whether the things that we're doing are the things that make the most difference. Because all the planning, all the thinking, we all know that sometimes we arrive at programs and ways of working that we think are going to be fantastic, and they just don't work for reasons we could have never anticipated. So it puts that kind of scrutiny around it. GHI is much more difficult to establish a set of detailed targets that are reported regularly than PEPFAR, the President's Malaria Initiative, simply because of the nature of the program. That's not a reason not to do it. It's a reason to sort of think very carefully about how do we take the global targets, how do we translate them down into country-specific activities and program-specific. And we are very active in thinking about that. We are very interested in being more transparent about that to all the communities interested. So look for more from us in these areas and know that it's occupying our time. Thank you very much for the question around the president's role. You know, to my mind, the president has been very active on this. When you look at what the president put forward in his budget in this area, in a budget where, you know, we know that there were many things that were important to the administration, and Jack Lew at the budget office and the president, everyone's talked about that couldn't be funded or couldn't be funded at current levels, and that we had a significant increase for global health funding in the budget. I think that's very meaningful, and I think that the administration should get a lot of credit for that and for keeping up the focus on the existing programs and stretching to do more. The high-level meeting that's coming up on HIV and AIDS is a very important one. It comes up at the 30th anniversary of the epidemic, which is a time to both reflect about our achievements, but also to reflect about where we haven't achieved and what remains to be done. And, of course, it comes at an important moment with the very significant research findings that came out last week on the best ways to prevent the spread of HIV and AIDS. So you can rest assured that your colleagues in the government are thinking very hard about how to make the most effective U.S. delegation and effort at that meeting. So we talked about targets, and then sort of you're asking, well, kind of what could be more target, the next set of targets. And, you know, I am very, very much feel like the challenges like maternal mortality, which can only be addressed by a systematic response. There is no bed net equivalent or vaccination equivalent. You actually have to have, you know, a healthcare delivery system with a skilled attendant who has the knowledge and information to be able to identify worrying signs, and then to be able to help a mother get to the next level facility. So the facility's got to be there, and the transportation has to be there, and the timeliness has to be there. And then, if needed, to get to finally a facility in enough time that has a surgeon. If we had that kind of system in place so that no more mothers would lose their life giving life, that kind of integrated system could also be used to save other lives. Skilled attendants who can understand worrying signs in labor can understand worrying signs in other conditions. Referral and transportation opportunities to step up levels of care can be used for other areas. So I think we have to look hard at whether we couldn't do more in some of these areas that help build sustainable platforms, and then help link those in the right ways to, you know, the important work that PEPFAR is doing on preventing transmission from mothers to their children, and how we can create momentum and leverage with that, how we find those points of leverage that help us catapult things forward versus grinding it out. So thanks for those questions.
We're going to take three more, and I'm going to pose one as well, which is we heard a lot of – I mean, the examples we heard in a way are a metric that I think are important to capture. It would also be interesting to hear the challenges, because implementing a new approach – we heard a little bit, I think, from Malawi, but if anyone from the field wants to add – other challenges that came up in trying to do this work would be, I think, helpful to all of us. But now we'll go to your questions, too.
Yep. Hi, my name is Jennifer Redner. I'm here on behalf of the International Women's Health Coalition. Thanks so much for all the words today. I had two specific questions for Beth Ann and Mamadi specifically. I was hoping that you could speak a little bit about, in Malawi, the PEPFAR process for the framework development, how it included local civil society in the planning and development of this PEPFAR country framework, and how you see local civil society playing into the GHI work moving forward. And then in Mali, there's a tremendous opportunity with the development of the 10-year strategy to engage women, young people, local civil society, et cetera. So I understand that the planning process is happening at the community and district levels, but if you could talk a little bit more specifically about what that looks like. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your wonderful presentations. I think this is really helping to concretize how GHI is rolled out in countries. I work, my name is Ade Adetisoye, and I work at USAID in the Office of HIV/AIDS. Countries are asking questions. You know, they have to turn in strategies soon, and they're asking specific questions. And I thought this might be a good forum to just ask a couple and see what you have to say. For those who are PEPFAR only, for example, what do their GHI strategies look like in terms of having one major funding stream that's for a specific disease area? How do they sort of look at, you know, put the GHI lens in and produce a strategy that's a little bit more comprehensive? The other question is, this is my question now. After the strategy is submitted, what are the next steps? What happens after you submit a strategy? What happens when there's staff transition and turnover? Is there an implementation plan? What are the next steps after the strategy, I guess? Thank you.
We take one more for now. And we'll come back to you after. Don't worry.
Hi, I'm John Barnes with Funders Concerned About AIDS. And I'm curious for Lois to tell me what advice I can give my members who are private funders who want to coordinate their funding with GHI.
Okay, so we had two specific questions for Malawi and Mali, and then I think some more general questions. Beth Ann?
Sure. Questions about the planning. you know, this, we are in the process of making this shift. So the full shift has not yet taken place, but some of the things that we're putting in place right now, look first to the structures which already exist in communities. And we've been working with our counterparts of the Ministry of Health to sort of inventory out those structures. First and foremost, which start with the governing body that we see at every community health center has a community elect governing body. And that community elect governing body is responsible for overseeing that community health center. We've done a lot of work already to empower those governing bodies to plan and better manage those health centers, but then to also report up to the commune and district level about what's happening in their health centers. So tapping into the work that we've already done to strengthen those governing bodies, we're looking at the leadership role that they can play along with district and commune leaders in implementing the planning tool that we're sort of working on and field testing with our UN agency counterparts and our local host government counterparts. We've also worked with a wide variety of donor partners to really, you know, understand the dynamics in the community of what local civil society and NGOs are available, religious leaders, women's groups. There's a very strong network of agriculture groups, youth groups, et cetera, that exist in the communities. And so we're testing out a few different ways that we can tap into some of those existing groups such that we can get the best information and not make a process that's overly cumbersome and bogged down in procedure and not giving us the results that we need. So under the leadership of the existing governing bodies in place and then tapping into those other organizations which exist, we're field testing a couple of different versions of a decentralized planning tool, which then if we see successes, we'll be able to roll out. The idea being that the U.S. government will be able to support its rollout in about 60% of the country through our already existing programs and networks, and then other donors and the Ministry of Health will obviously support the rollout in the rest of the country, as well as reinforce the rollout that we're taking place. So I think we are in the process, and it's an exciting process. I think an important point to make about religious leaders and youth groups, as I mentioned earlier, the large youth population has not been adequately sort of tapped into in previous programs. So we're really looking at those youth networks and how they can play a more active role in planning for their own health and future. And then also being in such a conservative country, a religious country, the important role that religious leaders play, especially in doing peer-to-peer education, religious leaders educating other religious leaders to empower their community to be part of this community planning process. In the communities where we've tested this already, it's proven to be hugely successful, especially around family planning and HIV/AIDS work. So I think, you know, 6 months from now, I can give you, you know, show you the tool and show you how it's worked in the communities, but we're still in the sort of development rollout phase.
Just to add briefly, I think the question specifically was asking me about local civil society involvement in the PEPFAR partnership framework process, and I will point you to Manet Plus, who were the organization that we worked with to make sure that they had input into the development of the partnership framework. I think one of the challenges we have in country as a U.S. government is doing bilateral planning versus using the structures in country, and so we have tried very much to be faithful to that, we've tried very hard to be faithful to that. And then with the GHI process, you know, we had an event in January where we were sort of doing a review of our PEPFAR program, as well as using that as a platform for what we would do with our GHI strategy to make sure those activities were going to be in our planning documents that were upcoming. We invited through our colleagues at Oxfam a couple of civil society organizations that were not funded by PEPFAR to get to hear from them directly what they felt about our planning processes. It was a meeting that actually had the PS of Health there, and we had a sort of a PS on the spot moment where civil society could not only challenge the PS but also challenge us about the limitations in our consultations of them. So I think that we are being very open and transparent in our processes in ways that we hadn't been before, and it's a work in progress. For the individual who asked the questions about what happens next, both the strategy and what happens in PEPFAR countries or in GHI countries that where the resources are largely PEPFAR, I think we need to constantly talk about the context and the countries that we're working in. Obviously, PEPFAR does have legislative requirements around the utility of those resources. And what we are doing is addressing some of the challenges that were mentioned, that PEPFAR is making an impact in maternal health, but do we have the right kinds of indicators to measure that? PEPFAR is making an impact in child health. Do we have the right kinds of indicators to measure that? Those are some of the things that we're grappling with right now. We also realize that GHI is many things in many different places. And so the resources are not always going to come from us, but we recognize that we, as many opportunities as are presenting themselves, we seize upon those. We've done some interesting work with family planning, very limited family planning dollars, but having HIV counselors and family planning counselors kind of get trained on a similar platform. So you're leveraging PEPFAR dollars in a different kind of way, but addressing something that is critically important to the long-term sustainability of our efforts.
Thanks. And for anyone interested in what is actually going into countries by these different funding streams, this report has an appendix with each of the countries, and it shows that. And if you wanted to.
Oh, yes. Thank you for all those thoughtful questions. Thank you for the question from my colleague at USAID. We have an extensive process underway with countries. We've had regional meetings, which has given me the opportunity to meet all the global health leaders from our countries and talk about the GHI. They're about 3 days long, so there's a tremendous amount of work that happens about what the plan looks like and learning from other countries. I am speaking to all the ambassadors from each of the countries. I have not gotten to each of them yet, but it's a rare day I don't have a call with one of the ambassadors to talk about GHI and its contribution. We have then other calls. For example, we're having quite a significant internal U.S. government call tomorrow with people who are working on the GHI plans for round two. On Friday, we're doing some planning about kind of what have we learned from round one and round two as we think about round three. And so I would, the questions you hear are really important for us to make sure that we're funneled in. And I'd urge you to contact your colleagues at USAID and the country support team who are sort of working on all these things day in and day out. As you get questions, just forward them over to them so that they can help everybody get a most effective response. So thanks.
We're going to take one more round, but I have a question for both Mark and Carl, which is, given what you've heard and your experience when you were ambassadors and also since then being in country, what are there things that you're already doing that are being reflected here, or are certain things really new opportunities that you're hearing about and say, well, that really is a different way of doing things that would have been potentially helpful? Or
well, I mean, I think one of the challenges in the past has been that not always has the chief of mission been, to be honest, adequately prepared for these programs. In many parts of Africa, for example, it's the lion's share of what a mission does. Traditional training in charm school, as they call it, for ambassadors tends not to focus on these sort of things. It tends to be more traditional and it's diplomatic training. The post in Brussels is a little bit different than the post in Kigali. So I think the GHI focus on communicating with ambassadors is terrifically important because it will help perhaps with a more even administration of GHI. But one of the things I'd like to mention here, as we take a look at the reporting and we take a look at evaluation of the GHI plus performance and plans, I think it's as important to ask ourselves what is not working as what is working. Because obviously not everything works. That's the nature of trying things. And I think all too often we focus upon just, you know, what can we do more of as opposed to, okay, this isn't the best use of our resources. Perhaps we need to reallocate it. So, you know, I would suggest that should be part of the training for chief of mission and should be very much part of what we're doing as we take a look at GHI Plus plans, figure out what's not working, reallocate resources, and don't be afraid to say what isn't working. You know, some may view it as bad news. I think it's just honesty and empowerment in terms of allocation of resources.
I think that's a great point. The climate in Washington, of course, is very unforgiving of perceived failures. And there is a very short-term mindset, unfortunately, that prevails very often in terms of funding and an expectation of results. But I think you're quite right that we have to embrace the learning that goes around understanding what doesn't work in development. After all, development is hard. It's not linear, and it's very long-term. So I would agree with that. I think from my perspective, you know, quite frankly, some ambassadors, like in every other field of endeavor, some ambassadors get this better than others. And when you have the right selection process, and I'm sure Secretary Clinton runs a tight one, she puts the right ambassadors, and the president puts the right ambassadors in the right countries, so that those who have the orientation and sort of exposure and interest in this set of issues, hopefully, are the ones on the ground. I tell you, it's certainly positive to have somebody such as Lois, with the close connection to Secretary Clinton, who, by the way, is very well-versed, better than any recent Secretary of State, certainly in my time in the State Department, on this set of issues, to have Lois sitting on the seventh floor and being sort of a point person for all this helps a lot. In that mass of the whole of U.S. government, my experience in the Foreign Service was there were sort of two places where everything came together nicely, potentially. One was in the Oval Office, and one was in the foreign policy arena in the ambassador's office. The ambassador has a lot of authority, and with the right sort of support in Washington, can exercise that authority to get things done.
Thank you. I think we have time for maybe two more questions, and you were very patiently raising your hand here. So one here, and then.
Hello, Denny Jones, HHS. One of the core pillars of GHI, that you touched on it, Lois, when you talked about maternal mortality, is health system strengthening. And it was one of the core themes that actually was introduced in GHI. And we haven't talked much about that. Ambassador Green mentioned a human capacity component of it, but there are many others. If you talk to ministers of health, the two things that they love about the GHI is country ownership and health system strengthening, because they've been begging for that for a long time. So the question is, how much are you willing to invest in that? And this is an area where leveraging could help. We were just in Lesotho where they were using MCC money actually to build some of the, you know, the maternal health facilities that they needed. So that sort of leveraging could be quite helpful here.
Chris Collins with AMFAR, thanks so much for this meeting. It's been really informative. And I want to thank you, Ms. Kwum, for making reference to the 052 results from 10 days ago, which really showed us that, you know, in terms of doing better on HIV incidence, treatment is a huge part of that picture in terms of getting an incidence. The question is, you know, we've heard a lot of great things around the way you're working in terms of reforming planning and systems change and capacity development. And those are absolutely essential. I think we all understand that. But in the spirit of just getting it done, which Mr. Hoffman said, which I think is the value we want to make sure we maintain as we broaden America's global health effort, in the spirit of just getting it done, I wonder if we can hear from you and from folks in the field at the services level, not at the planning level or at the data management level, but at the services level, are there examples of how the PEPFAR programming, their integration opportunities, in terms of doing family planning and reproductive health, that, you know, this really can be a platform at the services level, not just at planning?
So the answer, in my opinion, is at the level of our implementing partners who have seen the GHI process as an opportunity they have longed for to integrate services. And I'm sure you're pretty familiar with sort of the cycle in which we plan and then have little time to implement and then we plan again, and trying to figure out how we get some of that done before the next planning cycle. And I think that we have been looking very much to our implementing partners on the ground to help us figure out how to do this more rapidly and what are the adjustments that you can make in your current work plans, in the dialogue you're having with the Ministry of Health about specific things you can do. One of my favorite examples was going to a health clinic in Malawi and being told by the individual who was sort of like the general coordinator for the health system, and he said to me, what I'd like to be able to do is perhaps take the PMTCT coordinator position, the EID coordinator position, the ART coordinator position, merge those into one position, and then use some of those resources to put more nurses on my maternity side. Those are the sorts of things that we want to see moving forward as a result of GHI. I think that we totally agree with you that we need to get to the level of what is happening to benefit the people that we're hoping to help as quickly as possible. So, yeah.
Kayla, any specific examples? I think it would be great.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a couple things, bringing in, again, where we're doing the learning agenda, because the partner, the implementing partner for USAID, AFIA Plus, is looking at family planning and reproductive health issues. And so combining that together, we're really having for one woman and one family all of those services really integrated and then looking at, you know, what that looks like and what its impact is. So getting to the earlier question about interim indicators, looking at that uptake, looking at, you know, a child who receives a bed net and receives deworming, et cetera. And so really actually taking that integration idea and measuring it and implementing it across the USG, there's different money, different pots, and putting it all together and really leveraging it is what exactly we're trying to do and what I think GHI is doing. And just going to the maternal mortality question and health system strengthening, that's a very big part of the Kenyan portfolio. And even in the research arena, we were one of the sites for 052, and the kind of capacity and kind of infrastructure that's built even for a trial is being used for service delivery and is really being leveraged to improve the health sector. So we really are seeing across the board leveraging of investments and the strengthening of the capacity and the system itself. Thanks.
Thank you. And Beth Ann, anything to add?
No, I mean, I think you know, I agree with what my my colleagues are stating. I mean, right now, so much of what we're trying to do within our own systems and with the government is to, you know, as we go through this planning, as we go through this process, we always bring it back to the families and the women and the children sitting in their mud huts, and how are all these different procedures and processes and programs that we're jointly putting together, at this sort of central and regional level, how are they ultimately going to come down and impact those individuals out at the community levels, and how are, the programs that are currently happening, if we're training people at a regional activity, then how are those individuals taking that regional training and bringing it down to the community level such that community workers are being adequately trained and creating follow-up? So it's really looking at that whole spectrum within the system, where the points are that we can strengthen, but ultimately, instead of sort of, you know, keeping the ultimate end product is that woman sitting in her mud hut, we really put that woman sitting in her mud hut first, and then look at how we circle programs around her or around that family, around that community, such that that becomes the driving force and not the, you know, politically what's happening in the country or, between and the donors and the different activities that are happening. So it's you know, we're on the same page as the other countries, and it's an ongoing learning process for us, certainly with its challenges. But, the momentum that's being created is helping the government themselves to step up to the plate and recognize that the shifts that need to take place to better ensure that the impacts that we need to have happen are taking place.
Thanks. And Lois, did you want to have the last word?
These questions have been terrific, and I want you to know how much they mirror the kind of discussions that we have internally. And these last two questions are really good questions to end on, because the first question says, you know, this is about system strengthening so that we create something that's enduring and has momentum and can achieve targets far beyond what we've set. Doing it in a way that gets it done, that doesn't bog us down in planning and other kinds of processes, that doesn't deliver in the way that PEPFAR and the President's Malaria Initiative have been so impressive about doing, is saying, okay, there's all this that needs to be thought about, but we're doing it. And that is our aim, is to do it in a way that creates momentum to achieve much higher results and to sustain them over time. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. I want to just thank everyone for being here, and especially I want to thank Lois and thank Mark and Carl, but also our field representatives, Mama D, Kayla, and Beth Ann, for giving us a perspective that I think a lot of us have been waiting to have. There's a lot, many more questions we all probably have. We'd love to hear from more countries and implementing partners and actually ultimately communities themselves. So thanks to everyone for being here. We'll certainly do more of these and look forward to future.